Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality this evening. Tonight, I thought it would be interesting, if not propitious, and I'll explain that word in a couple minutes, to talk about how alternative energy can help to save our planet and to bring about a, hopefully, we'll say, positive and very productive change. I'm going to go into some of the more detailed things that on a prior show I just kind of skimmed over because we didn't have a lot of time. And it is connected, this is the propitious part, to the fact that the spiritual group I am part of is, yes, again, trying to do something to be of help in this area as well as many others. And one of the things that we are doing is we're starting a company that is dealing specifically with alternative energy. The name of it is Alternative Energy Approaches. And when I say starting, I mean we actually have been doing this for decades. But at this point, we're really getting very actively in making changes with other people. So I say starting because for that reason, the emphasis now is on getting the job done in comparison to a lot of experimentation and doing it here and there where it was appropriate and helpful, but not trying to really get a public movement involved in it. And also to do it in a concentrated area, which would be the Arizona part of the United States. For those of you who, of course, live in the United States, it's obvious, but some of you may say, where is that? In the southwestern part of the United States, there's a state called Arizona. And Arizona has a lot of sunlight, especially if you're in the southern part of the state, which is where we're at. We're in Phoenix. And the opportunity is there to use some of the energy from the sun to do some things. But beyond that, most of what we're concerned with right now is what could be done before we go to solar energy and other aspects, which I'll cover tonight, that are really just emerging. I know many of you say, well, hey, they've had fun. Where have you been? They've had solar panels for like 40 years, you know. The problem is they've had them, and they still have them, but are they cost-effective? Are they long enough lived? And do they have other issues that we have to be concerned about? And this is the part that I think you'll find interesting this evening, is that really what can mostly be done right now for everybody is more about conserving. That means using less energy, especially in our homes, apartments, offices, any place that we have an artificially developed environment away from the ambient part of the environment that's outside, we'd call it, and wherever we have an inside, we can take that inside and make it much more efficient for us to live in and reduce the amount of energy by over half for a reasonable cost that produces a obviously over half reduction in most people's carbon footprint. Now you might say, oh, what about cars? Well, you know, the interesting thing is that most of our carbon footprint isn't from automobiles, but rather from where we're living and or working. The two together by far outstrip how much carbon footprint we're putting out there in cars. Now, that's not to say cars aren't really important, but they're part of this whole equation, and I will talk about that as well, and what we can do about that, because there are some things that can be done. Tonight's show, we really get into the depth of how to be practical in making changes. Now, these are practical answers tonight. I'm not going to get into, well, we're going to get some of the Venusians to come over here, and they're going to set up a plant someplace about 500 miles above the Earth, and they're going to start shining down with the electric beams that are going to give us all the energy we need. No, I'm not going to talk about things like that, because all of that would be great if we were just trying to make a novel or, you know, some kind of fantasy about this. But rather, we need to come up with a solution, we being those of us who live here on a planet Earth, that really solves a significant portion of the problem we're dealing with in, like, five-year segments. We've got maybe, I'm not even sure, 5 years, probably a little bit less, before the first serious tipping point starts to take place. And then another 5 years or so from then before a much more serious tipping point takes place. But the first one may be so serious that we won't be able to reverse it, so that the second one's inevitable. And then there's a third one and a fourth one, and hopefully we'll make it past those, which could really, really, really be serious. Okay, I want you to know, if you want to call in about this subject or anything else dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, because, yes, I'll go off the subject if you really want to talk about something else, if it deals with those general areas, you can call at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S., 888-815-9756 for those of you in Canada. And if you're not in those two places, well, guess what? You probably can't call me. But, yeah, you never know. I don't know. Maybe you could call a friend in one of those places. And there might be some other way to do it. Okay, and then also I want you to know, when I'm off the air, you can reach me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I haven't mentioned that for a while, but some of you sometimes email me, and please do. I know I'm a little late sometimes. I'm getting back on those emails. You know, what it is there's just a lot to do here, and it's very hard to keep up with everything. So I'm sorry if I don't get back to all of them right away, but you never know. You'll get an email from me one of these days. It might be a different season, but you'll get one back, well, usually. Okay. All right, so let me go into some of these practical, that means we can do them right now, kind of ideas, and tell you what we're doing so that you can understand them. Some of this is a little proprietary because it's like, oh, we got these secret things that our company is doing. Yeah, the way we're going to specifically do it, I'm not going to reveal necessarily, because it isn't that we don't want to share this with everybody. On one hand, we would love to do that. But on the other hand, if some people go out and do this stuff and they screw it up, because they got a whiff of the idea, but they really don't understand what the heck they're doing, they're going to hurt it for us and everybody. We're kind of worried about that. So until we know that others are really capable of doing the right thing, so to speak, especially following codes and doing things according to correct ways, et cetera, the danger is that it could make a bad for everybody. So that's why I'm going to be a little bit, not extremely like put this screw in this bolt and turn it this way. I'm going to get into that kind of explanation. I'm going to generally speak about this so that it will be clear. For those of you who join us in warm or very hot areas, climates, the most serious problem for us is the need for refrigeration or air conditioning. That word sometimes is misapplied or used differently in different areas. We're talking about the kind of cooling that takes place usually from pumping energy from one side of a place to another, usually taking it out of a room or a building and putting it outside. The energy is moved. And it's a good thing to do, because it's somewhat efficient. It actually doesn't work all that terribly bad, although the technology has been around for like 100 years. But it is also still, when you want to do it for a whole house or an office building, takes quite a bit of energy when the temperatures rise much into the 90s in Fahrenheit and higher. So if you get up to over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, that could be very, very difficult as you're trying to move energy from inside a house to the outside. And that's what these units do. Most people don't know that's what a quote-unquote air conditioner really does. And it's different than using evaporative cooling. some people call evaporative cooling air conditioning. And that does not take as much energy, but there are very great limitations, especially as it gets hotter and if it gets a little humid. It just doesn't work all that well. And for most people, it's not adequate to live in very hot climates that have shifts in humidity from time to time. And we in Arizona have a thing called the monsoons, which really means that during certain seasons, you have large amounts of moisture suddenly come in a low pressure zone, sometimes developed diurnally. That means throughout the day and towards the evening. And it gets very humid suddenly. And then these air conditioners don't do a very good job. And there are other factors that come into play as well. So just that even if you don't end up with a thunderstorm, you might end up with just enough humidity so that the unit just not cool. Because the cooling comes from the evaporation of water on a water cooling system, whereas air conditioning just moves the energy out, which is what we're really talking about. And some people call it refrigerated air conditioning or refrigeration. So a lot of different ways to understand this concept. For those of you in the north and eastern parts of the United States and other parts of the world, air conditioning means just what I'm talking about, moving the energy out, and they don't usually use, because it gets too humid, they don't usually use what we call swamp coolers or water evaporative systems, because they just don't work in their areas virtually at all. Okay, so this is most interesting. Here we have a problem, because as summer approaches, there is a need to make it cooler on the inside than it is on the outside, and the temperature on the outside starts going up and up and up and up, and it sometimes gets too humid, and it gets nasty, and it's a very, very difficult process. And what are you going to do? Because to live, to sleep, to just have any degree of comfort, and also to work in your workplace, it's quite miserable. And you could say, well, isn't it true that 50, 75 years ago, particularly 75 years ago, most people didn't have this? You know what? Those folks are probably tougher than we are today, our grandparents probably. Some cases our parents, but most cases our grandparents. And, you know, they didn't know better, and in some cases they didn't live in quite as hot of places. I know in Phoenix we had populations that were measured in the tens of thousands, if you go before World War II, not a heck of a lot of people living in the city or in the suburbs surrounding Phoenix. And now today, Phoenix is the fifth largest city in the United States. We've got millions and millions of people running all over the place. We've got like 6 or 7 million people in the state, I think, or maybe it's 8 now. Whatever it is, it's a big enough number to make you say, oh, that's a lot of people. And so Phoenix itself is a large city. It has the metropolitan Phoenix area is the fifth largest city, at least that's what they tell me. And this is because of air conditioning. That's what brought it about. So these areas of our country couldn't have developed if it hadn't been because of air conditioning. Now here's the catch. Air conditioning can use a huge amount of kilowatt hours in a single day to do its job, because it has to run virtually, you know, it's on maybe half the day. It could be on 12 hours out of 24 hours a day, the unit's running. And it all depends on how efficient it is, et cetera. Now, what are you going to do about that? Well, I'm going to tell you something. I happen to know something, and that is that we have developed a system that, together with doing several different steps, we can raise the efficiency of most air conditioners in most circumstances, not everyone, but most, by 50%. And that doesn't really matter whether you have one of these called low SEER units at around like 8. That's a small number. The lower the number, the less the efficiency. Or you have a high one, like it's 16 or more. Because no matter how low or high, we have methods that will help to raise the efficiency of the units, and does so in most circumstances. And when it doesn't work, you can adjust it to make it work somewhat. It may not work quite as well. but you can still adjust it. So it's really very forgiving, and you can adjust it to make it work. 50%. That's conservation, folks. And it doesn't cost much money. It's more of a labor thing, and it takes some time to do it, like a day or something. But by the time you're done, that's what you end up with, and boy, is that a big deal. It's such a big deal that everybody, in my opinion, everybody who lives in a hot climate should be doing this like yesterday. And it's so important because it is a major amount of carbon footprint. For those of you who are interested in what that means, it means we're heating up the atmosphere by putting in carbon gases, starting with carbon dioxide, but there are other kinds called methane, and there's a few of them, actually, that produce a lot of hotter weather because they trap heat or energy by the gas itself reflecting energy back towards the planet. Wow. And making it like putting a bowl around the planet of these gases, and they trap it. They create a thing called a greenhouse effect, the same thing that causes greenhouses to get warm, literally. And so we can reduce by a major amount the carbon footprint, which is producing the greenhouse effect, by just doing this one thing to air conditioners. I'll tell you another little secret. It also tends to make, for those of you who have heat pumps, meaning that part of the air conditioners used to heat, as long as the climate is not too extreme and cold, it can actually help the heat cycle as well. So, because you're just reversing the flow of the energy in the air conditioner, and the same thing can be used to some extent to also improve the amount of heat that you can get out of the unit up to a certain point, and you have to be careful about where that point is and how well it's going to work. Okay. This is, and it's simple. It is not complicated. We make little devices that work so that you can do this. More importantly, it is installable, and we install them, and we can make virtually anybody's air conditioner work this way. There are some types of air conditioners that actually work a little bit better. You can do this with a window unit. Those of you who say, oh, well, I don't have one of those big things. I got something sticking on my window. And I live in New York, or I live in New York City, where it isn't as hot as you. What are you going to do for me? Same thing. We can do it there, but it isn't. You can't be as aggressive with it. It may not get 50%. You might get 25, 30. But the point is that you're going to get something. And that's a big deal, let me tell you. These units use a lot of energy. They really do. Okay, what else? You're going to say, okay, well, just one thing. Tell me more. Okay, well, we have ways of making windows. Windows, we lose about, give or take, 25% of our energy through windows. And if they face in a direction where the sun is shining and it's hot, we're going to lose a lot more than that because the sun is magnified by the factor that it's going through the glass. And it's being trapped in the room that you have. It's creating like a greenhouse effect in the room it's in. And it produces, in itself, a significant rise in temperature, like 10, 15, 20 degrees. It can get warmer from this. Now, you can use this in the wintertime. It's called a Trombi bulb, to create a whole heating system for a house. And for those of you who live in very cold climates, it's quite effective for heating a house. And then you can take the energy that comes in through the glass and recirculate it through the house in various ways. You can build a kind of like a whole system of air around the house, like a house within the house, and circulate it that way. You can save the energy in rocks in the basement and that sort of stuff. And you can also just force air, bring it around, just through your fan system on your heating and cooling system. There's lots of ways to do this. So you can heat a house pretty easily this way. The bad news is that if you got the opposite effect, in the summertime, if you've got some windows facing west and you're in Phoenix, man, you're going to cook. Let me tell you, the sun out here is like really, really hot. And if you got the windows facing the wrong way, you're going to cook, cook, cook. But we got an answer for you. Now you're going to say, oh, I bet you're going to put that black stuff on the windows. You can put silver foil, you say aluminum foil up, but I've seen that it's ugly, and besides, my homeowners association won't let me do that. You know, all those things might do some good, but you'll be living in a tomb. It'll be dark. Yep. And that isn't going to help you. And your neighbors may not appreciate having the aluminum foil up and getting reflected in their windows. And there are a number of homeowner associations in some of these areas, especially in the Southwest, that prohibit that because they don't like it. It looks kind of ugly. Okay. Then what can you do? Well, we've got treatments for windows that allows us to quadruple the convection value of the window. It's like you have four different windows up there. And at the same time, gets rid of almost all of the radiant heat that's coming through the window. And at the same time, gets rid of all of the UV going through the window. And the window is still virtually clear. So now you're not living in a tomb anymore. Your neighbors aren't going to say, take the mirrors off your windows, please. And the homeowners association is going to come over and bang on your door and say, you know what you did. So you're going to have the best of all worlds. And this will eliminate 20 of the 25% or so of the losses to the windows or more. Wow. And for those of you who have windows that are looking off into the sun at various times of the day, it'll stop you'll see the sun. You'll enjoy the light coming in, but there won't be any significant amounts of heat. It's cool. It's done with a thing that involves nanotechnology. Love the word. And it has to do with complicated ways of changing the wavelengths of light through the molecular structure of various types of films. You have to use more than one. But the result is amazing. Yeah, what I'm telling you is you could say, oh, yeah, you got that out of a comic book or something. No, we can do this right now. And you could say, okay, but how much is it going to cost? Not much. Not much at all. Everything I'm telling you about is low cost. That's why it's practical. It pays for itself. You're going to save way more in electrical energy in a few years than you're going to spend to do any of this stuff. So you're going to be way ahead of the ball game. It's not going to hit your pocketbook like some massive thing. And it is affordable right in the get-go. Yes. Now, do you have to know how to apply this stuff and do it correctly? And if you make a mistake, will it screw up? Sure. Absolutely. Will it last a long time? Yeah. How about decades? For sure. Yeah, we wouldn't put something up that's going to go away in a few months. I mean, nuts. No, it's got to last. It has to have permanence to it, of course. It does some other things, just for those of you who are interested in this. It not only does everything I just told you, which already sounds like it's a great deal, right? It also, in most cases, will protect the glass from breakage. And, protect it in the sense that, you come up to it, you hit it with a hammer, you could probably break it. But it will still not shatter. It will stay intact. In addition, under most circumstances, it makes it very resistant to breaking in the first place. So the resistance of breaking is going to be so strong that maybe eight or nine times out of ten, when a rock or something would normally break the glass, it won't do it. And then even if it does do it, you won't have glass all over the place, so it'll kind of hold it together. Tell me that isn't a good thing. Wow. I think these are fantastic. You could save just on broken windows, for what it costs to do this sort of stuff. And again, we're not doing it for that purpose. It's an added bonus. It just happens to go with it. Isn't that fantastic? I mean, the only other thing I want the window to do is say, hello, how are you doing today? I hope you have a great day. Now, when the window starts doing that, when the sun shines through it, then we really got some technology. But again, that's in the Fantasyville. And that isn't going to happen for a while. Another thing they're working on with the same nanotechnology, it'll be about 10 years from now, and this is going to shock you. You're going to be able to apply a little bit of voltage to it and change the opacity of the glass so that it'll look like you have shades up, but you don't. And you'll still be able to see out, but nobody will be able to see in. And then the next step is, or a different step, but maybe happening similar time, is going to be the window itself becomes a photovoltaic system, and some of the energy that goes through the window that's being rejected by the nanotechnology today will be used to create electricity with, all in the same window. Now, don't get that confused with what I just said about windows, because that's still 5 or 10 or 15 years into the future. I'll say an average of 10. They have a few of these working in laboratories right now. They're costly if you were ever to try to use them, and they're not practical because of that. And also, they have certain issues with them. So that's coming. Now, for those of you who say, well, I've got double glazing, I've got triple glazing, can I use this stuff? Yes, absolutely. Most windows you can use it on. If you're in a cold climate, there are limitations to what you can put on windows that don't have evacuated systems or some kind of inert gas in them, because then you can develop moisture. So that for that reason, we would have to talk to you about it more and tell you whether we could do it. But we're dealing, again, with a very warm climate where that's not an issue. It's usually in a cold climate that could come about, and then you have to look into it more. But for most of us who are living in the more temperate and especially the very warm climates, this stuff is amazing. Can it be used on cars? Somebody asked me that today. Yes, automobiles, cars, it could be used, the same technology. You could have the same thing. Instead of having those dark, dark windows and it still gets hotter than blazes in your car, no, this stuff you could put on have the same advantages. You got to make sure it'll clear your motors and your brushes and all the stuff in your windows if you have electric windows or if you crank them anyway. But in most cases, it will clear, and therefore, you will be able to use it. Wow. It's coming, folks. This is it. We're here. We got it. Yeah. Okay, there's a lot more to tell you. A lot more. I got kind of long-winded there, so I'm going to have to go a little bit faster in this second segment to even come close to covering all these ideas. But isn't this intriguing? I hope you find it interesting. Think about giving me a call in the second segment. And we'll be back in, oh, I'd say about 2.5 minutes. And until then, just keep thinking. And maybe when we come back, I'll hit something that you really get excited about.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
we're back. And we were having a little conversation here, that's our engineer, about, he was already excited. He says, okay, I'm ready for this, I think. I told him to get a group of people together and have them call, get all his friends together besides. And because I'd love to do more specifics about this, but as an efficiency thing, it would be great to have several people together. Now, he lives in California, I live in Arizona. I don't know if we could go over to California to do this, but we could be in contact with somebody else who could do it over there. Anyway, we would help them maybe to do that. Okay, let me continue on now, because we have so scratched only the surface of this subject, believe me. I don't know that I'm going to get through even half of this today, but, you know, that's why we could go to next week's show and continue with this. Because I think it's so exciting that we have technologies right today that are available to make a huge difference. And okay, let me continue on. The next step, you might say, in what we're doing. We also are concerned about the thermal efficiency of most people's doors. Okay, most people look at our door and they say, well, it's a door, you know. Well, what we are concerned about is that most doors, at best, have an R value, that's a resistance to energy transferring through the material of the door, of about 1 to 2 in that ballpark. Maybe closer to like a 1.5 or 2. And this is like terrible, because most walls, at least there are 6, and hopefully the walls on your houses and apartments and offices are more like closer to 20, but that isn't always true, depending upon its age and the type of construction, et cetera. So doors are not the greatest things. And then the other thing with doors is that they tend to transmit energy through the openings that oftentimes are there, outside doors now I'm talking about, where wind and the difference in air temperatures just goes right through. That's what weather stripping is for. So we recommend and do use weather stripping. It's absolutely necessary on any door to make sure that you don't have air circulating between the inside and the outside of where you are, because you know just as well as anybody that is going to make it pretty miserable. You're going to have drafts, and it's going to be, and you have bugs coming in too, and there's other issues. I mean, it isn't just the weather, but the weather certainly has a big factor. Okay. And ambient air from outside is not usually desirable coming in, except on a cool spring night. I love it then. Open the windows, as long as you got screens on and you got some security kind of thing. That's a fine thing. It's a good thing. But other than that, really, it's not so fantastic. All right. So what can we do then? Well, we have a method of insulating a door. It just requires about a half inch, literally, of material on the inside. It's very attractive. It looks great. And in some cases, the door will look considerably better than what you started with, because most doors are not all that great looking, you know. And this material, when put on a door, makes the door into a total of about an R9, for those of you who know what that means. It makes it, like, many times better in terms of heat transmission going through it. That, along with weather stripping, can be very effective, because doors can lose several percent or more, up to 10% of all the energy that's coming in or out of an apartment or house can come through a door. Depends on how good the door is and what it's made of, etc. So we have a way of dealing with doors. And then most people say, well, it's just a door. Well, yeah, it's just a door, but if it's the wrong kind of thing, you're going to lose a lot of energy in the process. That's the unfortunate part about it. Okay, what else can we do to make a difference? Well, one of the areas that is very important is that most people are unaware of the fact if they have any kind of space between where their roof is and where their ceiling is. Many people call that the attic space. Some people call it, you know, just a... It's sometimes not even a true attic. It may just be 6 inches or a foot or whatever it is. But that space can get superheated from sunlight in the summertime and become quite miserable, quite miserable. Now, years ago, there were available some types of what I call them whirly birds that were solar powered besides being wind powered that would tend to evacuate some of the air and exchange some of the air in a roof structure. Unfortunately, most of these, in fact, all of the ones we search for, have been taken off the market because they use very inferior motors on them and inferior types of photocells that ran them. So the photocells burned out within a year or two or 3 years. The motors burned out in the same period of time. They were just worthless. And then they sometimes didn't even spin. They were just sitting there like like little wind, we'll call them sideways windmills, sitting up on people's roofs. For those of you in the Southwest, I'm sure you've seen these. Now, the ones that just work purely off air are very good, except that it doesn't necessarily always blow. The air, wind doesn't always blow strong enough to do much good. But if you have an auxiliary, truly good DC motor connected to one of these really high-quality units, and a large enough one, along with the other areas where air can get in, because air has to come in and go out. It isn't just, you can't just suck against nothing. And you have a decent solar array. It doesn't have to be big, but it has to be high quality, one that will last 25 years. You don't want to put something up there that's going to last 25 months or something. That's crazy. And you put that on there for maybe one for every 1,200 square feet or so of area. On the inside, and then it's also volume. So if you have a big pointed roof, you might need it even more because you have more area that is getting superheated. That has a dramatic effect on lowering the temperature. In the Southwest, it can lower the temperature from over 200 degrees to about close to ambient, maybe about 10 degrees over the outside air temperature. That is really, really good because less energy then is going into your air conditioning ducts, into your ceiling, eventually gets in your house. An excellent thing. Another thing we can do is we can coat the roof. We can use various vinyl coatings, vinyl types of, or plastic types of roof covers that also seal the roof and become another type of roofing material that can actually block out rain and other factors from entering into the attic or into the house. Some of these are actually warranted for life. All of that, if you were to coat the roof, you can actually just reflect off a lot of the sunlight with that. You can also go into the attic and put in reflective materials that radiate back out the energy. There's lots of ways to reduce the amount of energy coming in to a house or an apartment or an office so that people do not experience the type of heat gains, particularly in the afternoon, from sunlight. And you might say, well, what about the wintertime? I want to stay warm. Well, a lot of these factors do not significantly adversely affect the wintertime use, particularly in climates where it isn't extremely cold. So this is a very beneficial factor. You can also insulate better the entire attic, putting in blown insulation, putting in fiberglass for those, some of you who know what the bats and all that stuff looks like. And you can also use foam in some circumstances. Commercial more better applications for this than residential. The foam has an R value that's very high, but high resistance to transferring heat through it. But it's better to use both a radiant barrier and some resistance to heat moving through the material. Because then you've got different times of the day and different ways of heat not getting in, or in some cases not getting out as well if it's the wintertime. Lots of advantages here, tremendous advantages. All this has to be balanced. You have to figure out how is the best way to make this whole thing work. Those of you who have indoor water heater tanks, and most people have these, it is best to wrap them. Now, some of you have been using the wrap that's like, it's like 3/4 of an inch thick or so, has a little fiberglass in it. Those are okay, but they aren't going to do a significant amount in changing the amount of energy loss from the tank. We have a system where we work 3 or 4 times better than that. And it just is much more effective. and it isn't any really much thicker than what is used in these wraps that they sell in hardware stores, etc. But it is much more efficient in terms of stopping the radiant energy coming out of the tank and heating up the surrounding area. Ever been near your hot water tank? How warm is it? Okay, if it's in a closet, the closet sometimes can be 10 degrees warmer than the rest of your house. You know that. Well, that with the stuff we use. You wouldn't even know the tank's there. It doesn't lose any energy. And the good news is if you're not using a lot of hot water, you're using a lot less energy to heat the water as it sits in your tank because it isn't cooling off. These are all good things. Now, you have to be careful. If you have a tank that is gas-fired, this material has to be properly applied so that you still have air coming in and it doesn't cause the gas to become suffocated by not having enough air to burn. So it's important how this is done. But done correctly, doesn't cost almost anything. There is some man hours, like maybe one or two man hours, female hours, to put these in. But the point is, once it's done, it's like there forever until your tank wears out. In some cases, some people have tanks that don't wear out. So the great news is that it's a really long-lived thing. And when it does, when it is applied, I should say, it really makes a huge difference. I can tell you this because I've been doing this for decades, and it works fantastic, really fantastic. Also, wrapping any of the pipes that are hot coming out of the tank, very important, as far back into the wall as you can because they're radiators. They just radiate some of the energy out. Got to be careful about closing off certain valves and other things. So you can't do this without some basic knowledge about what and how water tanks work. So it's very important, hot water tanks. That these are important areas. There's another thing you should know about, lighting. Now, a lot of people know about the little twisty fluorescent bulbs. Those things are efficient, and you can look at the number of lumens and compare it to the number of watts and try to get the bulb that has the most amount of lumens with a kind of light that you like, by the way. Some of them have different types of colors of light, different spectrum of light. The ones that are closest to sunlight are the best. And you want to get the most amount of lumens per watt. That's the secret. And there's a huge difference between the cheaper ones and the better ones. The better ones also tend to last longer. They use less mercury. They have some mercury. All fluorescents at this point still have a little tiny bit of mercury in them. So be careful when you discard them. And if you break one, be very careful. But they are extremely efficient, like 5 times more efficient. Coming up, not yet here, but coming will be AC, alternating current, not DC, diode lights. Those will be even more efficient and probably in the long run will use less energy, last longer. That's about 1 or 2, 3 years off. As soon as it is available, I'll let you know and even maybe where you can go get these. But the fluorescents are available virtually everywhere. I don't care if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or Sam's Club, Costco. They all have these bulbs, and you can just compare the efficiencies and decide which one you want to get. Now, the long tubes, you know, those long fluorescent tubes that you also see, oftentimes see as ceilings of light in bathrooms and particularly in kitchens, those things are pretty efficient, but not nearly so much as the newest versions. I'm going to tell you the difference. If you have a regular one from 10 or more years ago, it's called a T12 40-watt bulb. And you may have 4 of these in a row. And each one takes 40 watts. Plus, there's some energy that's also being used and wasted in a thing called the ballast. Now, that's an interesting design because that's the old style of bulb that was used for many, many years. Now, if you've got those, you can switch, and without switching out your fixture, to a T12 that only runs on 34 watts. Again, look for the most amount of lumens, for the least amount of watts, with the kind of spectrum of light that you like. And if it's more like sunlight, those are a bit more expensive, but they also are better for your, we'll call it physical and emotional health. So try to get those if you like them. Again, not everybody will agree with what I'm saying, but I think that's the best. But that isn't the end of the picture. We're down to 34 watts. That's still good. It's a good savings. You know, it's not quite 20% savings, but it's pretty darn good. Okay, but and you didn't have to change out any fixtures. But we do this. We decided to change the fixtures in most people's homes and offices if they haven't already gone to T8 bulbs. And there are two kinds of T8 bulbs. The T8 bulbs run at 32 watts, and most of you have those if you have T8 bulbs. But they recently, last year, came out with T8 bulbs and are now running 25 watts in near full-spectrum light with high lumens. Those are fairly expensive bulbs, but they last a long time. They have like 30,000 or more hours of life. And now you're down to 25 watts, with sometimes more lumens than you had out of 40 watts at a better spectrum of light. How's that for some savings? Almost half. And when you put out less heat from the bulbs, and I know a lot of you saying, well, how much heat is that? Well, actually, it's significant because we leave these on a lot. Some people leave a lot of these lights on for hours and hours and day. And if you're working in an office, it's almost always true. And it's a lot of watts. Start multiplying it out. Let's say you've got 20 fixtures in your office, which is not unheard of. I mean, it's a fairly large or medium-sized office, might have 20 lights. Each one has four bulbs, and each one's running 40 watts. Okay, well, 4 times 40 is 160 watts, plus there's some losses in the ballast. I'm not even going to count that. It's 160 watts times 20 is 3,200 watts. That's like having two giant heaters plus running all day long, electric heaters, just blasting away, heating up your office environment and putting out tremendous amounts of energy, even in the wintertime. You might say, well, the heat is good in the wintertime. Well, maybe, but most of it's staying up at the ceiling. It's like you're not going to get much out of it. And the thing about it is it's still burning the energy. And you're not getting much light for that energy in comparison to, now let's take the same situation, the same scenario, and we're down to 2,000 watts instead of the 3,200. We have tremendously shifted the amount of energy because we've got 100 watts times 20, which is 2,000 watts. And that's really a significant amount of energy difference. And you're getting more light, not less, usually of a better quality. Wow. Think about that. Such a simple thing. And when you add it up for 10, 12 hours in a day, where a lot of times that's how long these things are running, that's a huge amount of energy. That's many kilowatts. You take your 3,200 watts, 3.2 kilowatts, and multiply it by 10 hours in a day, which is typical, and you end up with 32 kilowatts of energy. And we will be saving 12 kilowatts a day by going to these T8s that are the 25-watt bulbs. That's a lot of energy when you multiply it by millions of offices and kitchens and you name it. That's a huge amount of energy. It really is. And, I mean, that could make up the difference of all of our, you know, imported oil. It could be, if you start figuring it out, that'd be a significant portion of our imported oil is coming from wasted energy from light bulbs. How crazy is that? I'd say, hey. And it's just the beginning because there's so much more, but I'm looking at the time and saying, oh, no, I have barely scratched the surface. I'm not even getting to where I wanted to get to, but there's a lot more to say and a lot more to do. Okay, these are practical solutions. I'm going to cut off going into the minutia detail for right now. I'm just going to give you a summation and just generally talk about what does this mean. There are so many things that we can do in alternative energy. I didn't even get to generating energy, and I'm going to get to that in the next show, believe me. I will, or the third one if it takes that long. Because you need to know about all the wonderful options that are coming already here or coming within the next 12 months. It's extremely important because we can all be doing something about it right now. Again, I want to reiterate, the general concept is that today we can conserve half or more of the energy we are using in our homes, apartments, and offices. And stores. I didn't mention stores. The stores are all part of this thing. We can save half the amount of energy by doing things that pay us back within a reasonable, practical amount of time in just savings in our electric bill that will reduce our carbon footprint by over half or around half, because you have to include automobiles. And I will talk about autos, too, so maybe that'll be in the third segment or whatever, because there's a lot that can be done there, too. I know you say, oh, I heard about all those stupid carburetors that do 300 miles per gallon. Now, that isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about simple things that conserve energy. Okay, we can do all these things, and we can do them today, and we need to do them now, absolutely now. Every day we do it now, we do something that causes the tipping point of our world to move ahead in time. We need that time. Because sometime by the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, we're going to reach the first tipping point. You have heard me say this before if you listened enough to my shows. That first tipping point is the North Pole. Yep, the one where Santa Claus is hanging out. The North Pole will be completely melted at least 6 months or more of the year. During that time, instead of reflecting 90% of the energy that strikes it back into space because it's white and, you know, what that fluffy stuff is like, it'll be mostly, as far as the sun is concerned, dark or black, because that's the way the ocean appears to the sun, and it will be absorbed as heat. 90% will be absorbed as heat instead of 90% reflected. We've reversed the whole process, and that will significantly start warming the oceans much more than it is right now, even though we've melted maybe half the ice by now. When the second half goes, we're in big trouble. Because then the Greenland ice sheet is going to be in big trouble. Within another 5 years, it will melt, and then ocean levels are going to rise as much as 20 feet. You can say, oh, you're one of those Al Gore people. Yeah, listen to Al Gore's, watch it's a DVD, An Inconvenient Truth. I think it's all accurate. Do look at it. We'll talk more about this next time. I'm going to just let you know that the WASOC, for those of you who are very metaphysical and spiritual, will be at 3:26 a.m., and this is Pacific time, so you can work backwards or forwards from wherever you are, Pacific time in the United States, 3:26 a.m. on April 20th. That's this Sunday. So for those of you who are into that and meditating about it, the WASOC. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, that's another show at another time. Anyone who has time on Sunday, hey, listen in to the Lost Continent of Atlantis, Part 5. I'll be talking on WDISAM.com if you're anywhere in the world, and 1170 AM if you're in the northeastern part of the United States. Please listen in. It'll be at from 1 to 2 Pacific Daylight Time. That's GMT minus 7 or 4 to 5 Eastern Daylight Time. Please listen in. I'd love to hear from you. And, well, we're out of time, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower. Now, you listen to me. You listen good. Call me. I'm just letting you know. Call me if you want to know more about this, and particularly get a group of people together. I forgot to say that. Get a group of people together, and I'll tell you more about this off the air, because it's too complicated to do by an email. Don't say, oh, email me with all the information, because I won't have time to do that. I forgot to say that. Don't email me and say, I want all this information. I don't have it prepared to give to you. But it is very important that you do this. And I would love to hear from you as either individuals, but I prefer if you get a group of friends together and give me a call, because that's critical if we're going to discuss this. I want to be as efficient as possible. I know a lot of you have been listening and say, hey, I like to get involved with this. Well, then let's talk about it. You can email me if you want to get involved in general, and then people of the spiritual group I'm involved in, they can get back with you. Okay, I'm going to sign off now, really, this time. I forgot about that one thing. All right, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Until next week.
This is Pete Seeger, and you're listening to BBS Radio.
Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Your host, Brooks Agnew, believes everything we do will eventually affect the universe. He's trying to do that on purpose each Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the BBS Radio Network. Come where the results are always positive. Explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You'll be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch. X Squared Radio.
Everything, but I'm not sure you deserve it. You tell me that